Chapter 1, in which Raylevan, trying to pick up the trail of his beloved, encounters much adversity. To be precise, he is accursed. At home and abroad, standing, sitting and doing his work. And Europe, meanwhile, is changing, developing new forms of warfare. The morning was foggy and quite mild for February. There had been a hint of a thaw in the air all night. The snow began melting at dawn, and the prints of iron-shod hooves and the ruts made by wagon wheels filled at once with black water. Axles and swingle trees creaked, horses snorted, and wagoners cursed drowsily. The column of almost 300 wagons made slow progress. The pungent, choking smell of salt herrings hung over the column. Sir John Fastolf rocked sleepily in the saddle. A thaw had set in after a few days of frost, and the wet snow that had been falling all night quickly melted. Water dripped from the snow lying heavily on spruce trees.
"Have at them! Kill them! Ah!"
The noise of the sudden battle frightened some rooks. The birds flew up from leafless branches. The leaden February sky became flecked with a shifting black mosaic, and the chilly damp air was filled with cawing, the clang and thud of iron, and yells. The fighting was short-lived but fierce. Hooves ploughed up the slush, mixing it with mud. Horses whinnied and squealed shrilly. Men uttered cries, some warlike and others of pain. It began suddenly and was soon over.
"Huzzah! Cut them off! Cut them off!"
Then again, more quietly, further off, the echo bounced around the forest.
"Huzzah! Huzzah!"
The rooks cawed, circling above the trees. The thudding of hooves receded. The shouts died away. Blood stained the puddles, soaked into the snow. The wounded esquire heard the rider approaching, alerted by the snorting of a horse and the jangling of a bridle. He groaned, tried to stand up, but fell back. His efforts intensified the bleeding, the crimson steam pulsating more strongly between the plates of his cuirass and flowing down the armour. The wounded man settled back harder against a fallen tree trunk and drew a dagger. Aware how feeble a weapon it was in the hand of a man who couldn't stand, whose side had been pierced by a spear and whose ankle was twisted after falling from his horse. The approaching bay colt was a pacing horse, its unusual gait immediately visible. The bay's rider didn't have the sign of the chalice on his chest, so wasn't one of the Hussites the esquire's troop had just been fighting. He wasn't wearing armour or carrying a weapon. He looked like an ordinary traveller. The wounded esquire knew only too well, though, that in the month of February, Anno Domini 1429, no one was simply travelling in the Strigom Hills or the Yavor Plain. The rider examined him at length from the height of his saddle. At length and wordlessly. "That bleeding needs staunching," he finally said. "I can do it, but only if you toss that dagger aside. If you don't, I'll ride off and you can cope by yourself. Decide."
"No one," the esquire grunted. "No one will pay a ransom for me. So don't say I didn't warn you."
"Will you toss the dagger aside or not?" The esquire swore softly, took a big swing and flung the dagger away. The rider dismounted, unfastened his saddlebags, then knelt down beside him, holding a leather bag. He used a short folding knife to cut through the straps attaching the two parts of the breastplate to the cuirass. After removing the armour, he slashed open the blood-soaked gambeson and looked intently, bending low over the wound.
"Nasty," he muttered. "Looks very nasty. Vulnus punctum, a stab wound. It's deep. I'll put on a dressing, but can do no more without help. I'll carry you to Strigom."
"Strigom besieged. Hussites."
"I know. Don't move."
"I think,"
the esquire panted,
"I think I know you."
"Well, I never. Your face looks familiar to me, too.
I am Vilkos Lindenau, the esquire of Lord Borschnitz. May God rest his soul. The tournament in Schompitze, I escorted you to the tower. For you are..."